What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Red Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Salman Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by Forrest Walker at DoNots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Hey, hello. Pretty good.
So can I ask you something?
Yeah, ask me.
Do you enjoy Lance Stephenson?
I enjoy the existence of Lance Stephenson, I guess, is the way I'll answer that.
Yeah, okay. It's a tricky subject, right? Because I do enjoy him. Like, I enjoy him a lot. I enjoy the shenanigans a lot. But his checkered past makes me feel so guilty about it. Like,
yeah.
It's like I'm rooting for a bad person, but like it's like a really entertaining bad person. Like Louis C.K. Like Louis C.K. was like one of my favorite comedians. And now it's like I feel bad watching his stand-up specials now, because it's just like, you know, like, you know the dude's just a... Like, I feel the same way about Lance Stephenson. Like, I mean, if you just Google Lance Stephenson and, like, you'll figure out what we're talking about if you're a confused listener right now. It's just... It's a tricky subject, but the guy makes this playoff so much more entertaining. Especially when he's matched up with LeBron. Like, there is this one play today where LeBron just, like, shoved Lance. Just shoved him. Because he was just tired of his crap. And Lance just... fell flat on his in a way that he probably wasn't supposed to fall, and just looked straight up at LeBron like this is what you get, like I just baited you into this stupid foul.
Yep. He's fun to watch out there. You're right about your concerns about him. It turns out that he's not the first bad person you've ever rooted for, and he won't be the last.
Right.
Same goes for everybody. Yeah, it's pretty hard to like him as a person, but it's pretty hard not to be amused by watching him on the court.
Right, separating the art from the artist is a real topic in today's
world.
It
is a topic.
Yeah, it's going to be a topic for I would guess the next 10 years. It's
until people stop making art. Yes.
Yeah. Or yeah, probably you're right. It's probably longer than that. Yeah, so let's do this. I've been trying to figure out how to go about this. So let's just do this. Give me your grade on how you feel about how the Rockets performed in round one. I'll go first. I'm going to give it an A- or like a B+. Like, they did what they were supposed to do. They finished out a team that they were way better than in less than six games. And, like, that's kind of what you have to do. But it wasn't very convincing. And, like, they struggled offensively a lot throughout the series up until these last two games. Defensively, they were a stalwart up until these last two games. Like, they've been kind of a different team every single game, and their consistency just hasn't been there. And it's been a little bit of a worry, but, like, if you look at their statistics, like, they're performing like one of the three best teams in the playoffs, which is, you wouldn't believe that if you didn't look, right?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, right? And it's just because their defense has been on point in the series. I would give them a B, because, good job needs effort. Like, right. They very clearly knew they were the better team, which I guess as long as you're the better team, you can get away with that, but it's probably not a habit you want to get into. Like, the only real concern for me is that they sometimes rest on their laurels a little bit. Like, game three, they shouldn't, even with everything, I know everything went right for the Wolves in game three, but optimally, you'd like to see them be able to power through that. They really come out swinging. Like, they've had bad first halves. You know, they just kind of come out there not really with any intensity, and then they win it in the end because they're just a better team and they know what they're doing. But it'd be nice if they wouldn't dig themselves in those holes. So, yeah, I think it's a solid B. You shouldn't feel bad about it, but there's room for improvement.
So is that just what it is? You think they just overlooked the Wolves a little bit? Is that what it is?
It's partially that. It's partially that the Wolves are decent. Like, they're not terrible. We think of the Wolves as this, like, you know, butt-nasty team. Just like, oh, they're the AC. They're going to get crushed. They were like, the Rockets were minus 5,000 to win the first series from Vegas. As well, they should have been. But, like, the Wolves aren't that bad. They're pretty good. The West in general is pretty good this year. Like, basically everybody from like, 3 to 8 was about even, honestly, in the West this season. So I think to some degree that it being a first-round series made it feel like it'd be easier to beat them than it really was. But they beat them in 5. They had quarters where their effort was not great, and that's the only thing you can really, like, criticize them on.
Yeah, you made a good point about the first half. So, like, it really felt like it took them a while to get within their rhythm, and that's been a little bit of a concern to me. Like, they probably shouldn't wait to the third quarter to step on their throat. Like, it's not an ideal situation. But you're right, this team probably is better than an 8 seed. Like, this was a 4th seed before Jimmy Butler got hurt. I think even higher than that. I think they might have
been a 3 for a while, yeah.
Yeah, they were a 3rd seed before Jimmy Butler got hurt. But, like, you know, it is what it is. They beat them 5 games. Like, it's, you can't complain. I just want to see, like, them to get a little bit more consistency. Like, that's all I want from the Rockets in round 2. It's just give me some more consistency. I think they've played well when you put all the games together. Like, as a whole, they've played well. But when you look at the pieces as a whole, like, game by game, they're just a little bit inconsistent.
Yeah, I on a similar note, what I'd like to see from them next round is for them to really come out there hungry for a sweep. Like, I want to be convinced that they actually think they can and really want to sweep a team. Because it felt like with the Wolves, like, they wanted to finish the series off, but they didn't seem to have any real urgency about it, which they didn't really need to, I suppose. But when you're gearing up for the conference finals, like, I think that in this round, you really have to get those wheels turning. And you really need to go out there with the intention that we demand to win every single game.
Right, and they didn't make really any adjustments this series, and I think that was a purposeful thing. Like, they really wanted to stick to their game plan no matter what. Like, they didn't make any devise any special defense for Towns. It was just a straight switch everything and then double occasionally. Like, it wasn't anything special, and, like, pretty much, like, I think the Rockets really just wanted to believe that they would win this without having to do too much. And they did that, but I think the next series where you're really going to get into the nitty-gritty of, like, you know, the different rotations and the different substitution patterns and, you know, different schemes. Like, all that stuff, I think it's going to happen in round 2. But in round 1, they really just stuck to what they did all season, and that was good enough. I guess you can't really ask for too much more.
Yeah, that's why it's, you know, the only thing they could do is improve their early effort a little bit, and we'll see how it goes. But this whole season has been as good as you could reasonably ask for. This first round was more the same. It never felt in jeopardy. There was not, like, a single moment in that series where I felt like there was a chance they could lose the series.
Now, I'm going to say something, and like, I don't want anyone to take it the wrong way, and it's going to sound like I'm getting on my high horse, but, like, the Rockets were, like, up big going into the fourth quarter of game 4, right? And I started to see people clamoring for Mike D'Antoni to pull the starters. And, like, normally I agree, in the regular season, I agree with that sentiment. Like, I'm full, you know, rest your stars when you don't need it. But, like, this is the playoffs, man. Like, the Wolves hadn't played their starters. They haven't pulled their starters yet. There was still enough time for them to make a run. And rest doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter. You rest for the playoffs, like, so you can play heavy minutes in the postseason, like, that.
Yeah, they're winning that game so they could have 3 days off.
Right, like, there's no, like, I don't understand, like, why it's such a big outcry if D'Antoni doesn't, like, rest everybody in the fourth quarter. Like, it's not like the Wolves had pulled Jimmy Butler and Towns out. Like, they were still in the game, and, like, as long as those two are out, there's still enough time for them to make a run. And, like, Like, this is what the postseason's all about, man. Like, they kept their starters fresh all season. Like, they're good. Like, all of their minutes stayed relatively in check all season long. And I don't know. Like, I think it's just Mike D'Antoni. Like, he's developed a little bit of a Tibbs reputation, and I think it's kind of unfair. Like, he's not Tom Thibodeau. Like, he's not playing guys 40 minutes a night. Like, he's just, like, he's very much a rhythmic coach. Like he talked about it a lot towards the end of the season. Like he didn't want to rest his guys too much because he wanted the guys to play in a rhythm. Like, you always hear him talking about rhythm and tempo, and, like, he's very much a feely coach. And I feel like that's just what you're going to get. Like you just have to live with it at this point. Like, and it's not like he's doing anything absurd. Like, I don't think they played their guys 40 minutes once in the series.
No, they played a totally normal amount of minutes last game in the whole series.
Yeah, I'm done with that sentiment. Like you rest in the regular season so you can be fresh and you can play heavy minutes in the postseason. That's the entire point of rest. LeBron's playing like 45 minutes a night right now. Like I'm not saying that's ideal, but like that's not what. But like this is kind of why you do it in the regular season. So you can afford to do it in the you can play every minute of the postseason. Like, every game matters in the postseason. Like, every game is life or death in the postseason. And that's why you can afford to play heavy minutes. In the regular season, like, games don't matter as much, and that's why resting is important. We should probably talk about Harden's defense in this series. The guy stepped up big time. And it's not just the steals and blocks. It's the effort. Like, he was just rotating really well. Like, it's some of the best defense I've seen from James Harden in a Houston Rockets uniform. Like, the guy was legitimately impactful. The Rockets were 4 points per 100 possessions worse on defense when Harden wasn't on the floor. And you can look at other statistics. You can look at defensive win shares. You can look at, you know, if you're really old school and you want to look at steals and blocks, like, sure. But those really don't tell the whole story all the time. But yeah, he was a really good defender in this series, and I'm wondering how long this lasts. Like, can he carry this momentum into the second round? Because if he can, like, that's a real ace in your hole. Like, that's a big weapon to have, Harden focused like that. Maybe it's because Mbamute's out, and the Rockets felt like they needed to get their max effort out of everybody. But like, defensively, Harden was really important for them in this first round, which is something you don't expect to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can totally keep giving us a little effort. That's all that really is required, that he just keeps giving us a little effort on defense, and he will be a positive defender. He has the tools he needs. You know, his focus is not great, but when he tries, he can try. He doesn't have to be a negative mass defender. People think that he's innately just a terrible defender. He's not. He's been in bad schemes, and he's had bad effort and bad attention years, but he's looked good this season. He's looked quite good these playoffs. Yeah. I think that he's going to continue to be playable on the defensive end. He better be. He's not worth his salt as the best player on a championship team if he can't do this. So,
right, he's very much a fine defensive player at this point. You're never going to get him to be a great defender. Like, he was really good in this series, but like, really good for James Harden. Like, it's not like, you know, I'm not saying he's like Mbamute at this point, but he's been good. And it's just something to note. It's just something I noticed. As we speak right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder are playing the Utah Jazz, and they're fighting for their life in an elimination game. I've seen people talk about this on Twitter. I'll just go bring the conversation here. Like, is there an opponent you want to face in the second round? Like, is there someone you have your eye on between those two? If so, why?
Man, I don't know if people believe me when I say this, but I just don't really care. Like, it doesn't matter who they meet. They're better than both those teams. They're not worried about it. I'm not worried about it. It is whoever it is.
Yeah, like, and like, I'm with you. Like, these are pretty much the same team, as in, like, in terms of, like, the level of contendership. Like, one team has more star power, but like, in whole, they're about the same level of team. And I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe, like, you probably want this series to go seven, but like, aside from like that, I don't see any real advantage of facing the Oklahoma City Thunder versus playing the Jazz or vice versa. Like, it's just like, they're both gritty defensive teams. They both have annoying wings, which might, you know, bother the Rockets, but like, I don't think I just don't see a real challenge here. Like, I think this might be a very much like a 5 or 6 game series in the second round, and I don't know. Like I'm just interested to see, like, are there any of these teams going to make the Rockets adjust? Because they haven't had to adjust yet. And if that's the case, I mean, I'm fascinated to see what that adjustment is going to be. We've talked about PJ Tucker being like a big, like, bellwether for the Rockets in the playoffs, and so far he's been great. Like, he's been making teams pay for sagging off of him, and like that was something I was watching for in the first round. And I want to see if that continues. But other than that, like, there's not much interest here. Like, I don't have any rooting interest in this series. And I'm just watch. I just kind of watch. Want to see a good game, and like if the Thunder come out and they win this game and they force a game 7, great. Like, that's more rest for the Rockets. If not, you know, and the Jazz win and they close it out, I mean, all power to them. The Rockets play earlier than they were supposed to. That's pretty much the only difference, right?
Yeah, is which day of the week they start playing on. For what it's worth, the Jazz have a little bit better metrics than the Thunder do. Not a ton, but like a bit. So I think the Jazz is a better team overall. But honestly, it's so immaterial. Like, it's
a coin flip.
Yeah, they're either one's going to be a pain in the butt, but like they're going to be more of a pain than the Wolves were, because they're like OKC has more talent and can go on more crazy runs. The Jazz are just sort of a better put together team overall. Like, they actually, the Wolves had a lot of injuries and were still figuring out how to not be children. So I definitely think they'll be tougher than the Wolves, but I don't think like by a ton. I mean, consider this. Here's the thing I've been thinking about. Remember on the last day of the season when anybody could land anywhere in the playoffs, basically?
Right.
The Rockets could have gotten the Jazz or the Thunder in that first round. Would you have been worried about, like, would you feel differently about them as a first round or second round opponent?
Nah, I mean, like, it's just, like, the Rockets are, we've talked about this, the Rockets are just such head and shoulders above everybody. They shouldn't, and these teams should be a cakewalk for them. And that sounds a little bit cocky, but I mean, it's just, that's, we have these expectations for the Rockets.
Like, yeah, it should be a 5 or 6 game series.
Right, like if it goes 7, that's a disappointment. Like that's legitimately, if we see a game 7 in round 2, that does not bode well for the Rockets going into a Warriors series.
Yeah, I think a lot of like the, I guess, trepidation is coming from the fact that it is a second round series. Like if the Thunder had landed the Rockets in the first round, I guarantee you everyone would have also predicted 5 game win in that series. But because it's the second round, because if they've beaten the Jazz, they're more credible, then like, so it feels more threatening because it's the second round. But they're still the Jazz and the Thunder, right? We still would have favored the Rockets to beat them in the first round. Why would we not favor them to beat them in the second round? So like I said, I think the Jazz are a little bit better team, I guess. So I suppose you might prefer the Thunder, but it just feels like neither of them are near the level of the Rockets. They're not so different in how good they are that it's a huge gradient. So you just play whoever you play and don't worry about it.
I'll say this.
I think the fans should feel the same way.
I'll say this. The Thunder feel a little bit more combustible than the Jazz. Like, the Jazz are so well put together. I think they're better coached. I think they're smarter in how they play. And I think they have a clear and coherent plan. And the Thunder, I don't believe, have that. Like, it's pretty much let Russ and Paul George go crazy, and that's it. And like, it's, you know, it's not this. It's very different in that they don't have a spaced floor. Like, the Rockets kind of do the same thing, but they have a spaced floor. They run a ton more pick and roll. Their guys are better shooters, and like, it's different. But like, I just feel like that the Jazz are much better put together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they're a coherent team, that makes sense. They have like a functional offense.
Yeah, they swing the ball around a lot more. Yeah, yeah.
Their offense, but their offense is also, I think, more schemable, if that makes any sense, because it is like an offense that you can figure out. OKC's offense often boils down to Russ does things, and you can't really scheme that one out, right? It's just whatever happens, happens, and you just try to guard Russ. So. So we'll see. I think that the Thunder have a higher variance, but that the Jazz have a higher expected value, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. All right, so we got the vegetables out of the way. Let's get to the dessert. I want to slam the Thunder for a little bit. But last week I came out near and I admitted I was wrong for saying Harden would never win an MVP. But this week I'm going to do some victory laps. Carmelo Anthony looks awful, and he's looked awful all season. I told you so. I told you so. I got so much crap from people on Twitter when I said I preferred the Rockets to keep Ryan Anderson than trade for Carmelo Anthony. And my rationale was simple. Carmelo was declining, and he was declining fast. And it was so obvious to anybody who watched the Knicks, and I felt like his name value was higher than his on-court value. But, like, I just felt like people thought, right, like, Carmelo Anthony was going to be this huge game changer. And I battled against that for the longest time. And, like, I was not crazy about the Rockets trading for him. And he looks awful. He looks pretty much washed. Like, he looks a lot worse than he did last year. So, like, I'll give you that. Like, he does look different than he did last year. But, like, quite frankly, he wasn't going to be this crazy addition everybody thought he was going to be. And I don't know. I just want to do some victory laps. I just, like, right now PJ Tucker looks a lot better than Carmelo Anthony. Like, he looks like a much more functional and useful basketball player than Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, Anthony's awful. He can't move. He can't shoot. Like you said, if he was playing the same way he did last year, he'd be a lot more usable. Even with, like, he's doing the Olympic Melo thing that people were looking for, right? He's doing a thing where he flies off the ball. He catches and shoots. He relegates himself to a lesser role so the team can use him as a decoy and such. But he's not good at that. He's not good at anything. He's just bad. Whenever he's on the floor, they get destroyed on the defensive end, and they can't rely on him to shoot anything on the offensive end. He'll occasionally shoot well, like he did against the Houston in the last game the Thunder and Rockets played this season. But anybody will occasionally shoot well. He's just bad, and you're right. Like, I don't know how prescient you were about it, and I don't know how much we, like, didn't expect you to drop off, or we misestimated how much he already had dropped off. But, yeah, he's basically unplayable this season. That last Thunder and Jazz game, the Thunder came back in miraculous fashion, and it happened while Carmelo Anthony was taken off the court, and right. That's for a good reason.
Yeah, and I'll say this, like, nobody expected him to become just a bad shooter. Like, that's weird. Like, with Carmelo Anthony, you always knew you had a good three-point shooter there, and right, and that was the whole rationale for trading for him. Like, you have a good three-point shooter, so you're not losing too much, and he can make you play, you can make you pay off of closeouts, right? That was the rationale there, right? And the guy just, like, he doesn't look like a good three-point shooter. It's weird. And his percentages are much worse than they were last year. And, like, he's, like, I think we romanticize Olympic Melo way too much. Like, I just think, like, Olympic Melo, like, first of all, that was a very special environment. Like, it's, like, he was playing next to peak Kobe Bryant and peak LeBron James. And, like, some of the best basketball players of all time. And the three-point line was closer in Europe. And, like, there was a bunch of extenuating circumstances around how well he played in the Olympics. And, like, it's not just that. Like, he's definitely gotten worse. His skills have deteriorated over time. But, like, you can't recreate that situation anymore at age 32. That much is clear. Like, the guy is just a inferior basketball player from now than even where he was in 2012. Like, in 2012, he was a pretty good basketball player. But, like, now it's gotten to the point where he's probably, like, his best situation in the NBA might be, like, an inefficient bench scorer. Like, he might be, like, a Lou Williams type, but not as efficient. Like, that's kind of where you're at with Carmelo Anthony.
Well, take him. You earned him. you told us also, and honestly, I'm glad that the thing you told us was so, because now the Rockets are much better than the Thunder.
Okay, let's move on to the refs discussion. So I'll clear out here, and I'll let you get your opening thoughts up, because I feel like when I texted you, it felt like you had a lot to say on this subject.
All right. This is a pretty fraught issue right now, and in fact, it was wild, like, a couple nights ago when everybody was ready to pile on Russ as it looked like they were about to lose that game. And it really looked like they were about to lose that game. The Thunder were down 25 points in the third quarter. You don't win games like that. But then they went on what was like a 35-7 run or something. The Jazz stopped hitting shots. Rudy Gobert fouled out when he came back, or he got in foul trouble when he came back in. He was very worried about fouling, and they were able to pressure him. So that was an intense situation, and suddenly the worm turned rapidly. There's a lot of feelings out there about Russell Westbrook. There's a lot. Last year's MVP campaign is still not over, which is pretty wild. Like, it is currently getting litigated in the playoffs as we speak. There's a ton of people who are ready to, like, if and when the Thunder lose this series, they are going to get, like, they're just going to get deluged by haters. And I am done litigating last season's MVP award. There were four guys, all of whom were perfectly deserving MVPs, and it's fine. It's over. It's fine. Moving on. Russell Westbrook did an amazing thing, and it's not bad that he won that MVP. But good Lord, the universe seems to be trying to convince everybody that that was the wrong choice, right? Like, I don't think it necessarily was the wrong choice, but every part of reality seems to be conspiring to make it look like it was the wrong choice.
Yeah, I'll say this, and like, Russ is clearly an impactful basketball player, but he's also clearly flawed, right? Like, and
yeah,
like, and I hated when we were never allowed to have an honest conversation about him, and like, we always heard let Westbrook be Westbrook, and that infuriated me because like that's not, first of all, like, that may not be, if he's your best basketball player, that may not be a viable strategy to winning like real playoff series or ever winning a championship. If that's gonna be your comeback every single time, like, okay, fine, then win 48 games every year. Let Westbrook be Westbrook. Like, that, like, that's kind of where I'm at with Westbrook. Like, if that's your rationale, like, if you truly feel like he shouldn't have to change as a basketball player, then you have to live with the results. This is what you get. This, they added Paul George and they're one win better, right? And I know there's a lot of stuff behind that. There's a, like, the Thunder were a lot better in clutch situations last year and won a lot of games that they shouldn't have. And this year they aren't as good. And I get it. I totally hear you, Thunder fans. Like, I understand it. Like, but the fact of the matter is, like, they still are not that much of better of a basketball team after adding Paul George. And I know they lost some key role players this summer. But
they downgraded by picking up Carmelo Anthony.
Right, that's you can definitely say that, right? Like, I understand the rationale there. But you added Paul freaking George. Paul George and Russell Westbrook should be enough to get you to 50 wins. Like, I'm sorry, but that should be enough to get you to 50 wins. 50 wins is not asking too much. It's not asking you to move the sun and the moon. Like, it's just a baseline for a good basketball team. And I just don't understand why they underachieved this year. And if the rationale is like, oh, like, well, they still don't have shooters, that their defense isn't as good without Robertson, and you're right, like, their defense definitely took a dip without Robertson, and that he was definitely an impactful basketball player, and I get it, like, I know, like, trust me, I was the guy clamoring for Luka Mbamute being a key role player, and I got slammed on for it, right? Like, being, like, I get that these guys matter, right? These marginal players aren't as marginal as you think. I understand that. But your team should still be better than this. And that's kind of the thing with Westbrook, right? Like, you can never get, like, you're always getting half of what you want.
Yeah, he may just not be a guy who can be your best player. Or at least the way to best use Westbrook individually is probably not going to be enough to win you a championship, for whatever that's worth. Maybe you don't care about winning a championship. I think it's pretty clear at this point that last season their win total was inflated. His right. Incredible clutch play, make of it what you will, it won them a bunch of games they probably shouldn't have won. They won 47 games. They probably should have won like 42. Like, they were about a 500 team last season, but we don't realize that because they won a bunch of games they shouldn't have. And then they are actually played below their point differential this season, so they probably should have won 50 games, honestly. They lost some games that were pretty close. You know, they won some games big. So they did underachieve a little bit this year. They overachieved a bunch last year. But be that as it may, the important thing here is that we go on and on about triple doubles. I know it's like a running joke among Rockets Twitter to make fun of Google for getting triple doubles. It's gone more now.
Yeah,
it mostly was Rockets Twitter before. It's everybody who's kind of tired of the Russ experience now is clowning about that. But the fact of the matter is that they should be getting him those triple doubles because that's the way the team has their best success. And that's not good, though. Like, this is their game plan is that Russ does everything and gets all the rebounds, all the assists. That's what works for them. But that's not winning in long term. That'll win this season. Like, game to game, that's the best thing they can do. And it's totally fine. They should stop pretending like, oh, he just completely does it by himself. No, the whole team is in on it because it helps them. Like, it's not stat padding. This is just their game plan. But also, don't act like it's only just one guy doing everything. This is what they want to happen as well. They should, but it's not a recipe for long-term success. You have a ceiling on how good that is, and that's where everyone's kind of gotten at this point. That they're realizing that there is a ceiling to Russell Westbrook's teams, and it depends on how good Russell Westbrook is on any given night. And honestly, I think most of the Westbrook hate comes from two places. One is that MVP last year was so contentious, and it's like, it's looked so bad since then. And then two is that he's obnoxious. Like, I'm sorry, Russell Westbrook is obnoxious. It's funny that he's such a turd after the games and stuff, but he goes out there and just, he's so sensitive and irritated and just wants to be mad at everybody. He comes out and says he's going to shut that down with Rubio. And then they get waxed the next game. And then he's like, oh, we're not going to talk about that. Like, this is how he always is. He always is mad at the media. He always acts like anything anyone says to him is them trying to get him. It's no wonder that people are irritated. He's not doing himself any favors, but it's like being pissy at every possible turn.
Well, here, I'll say this. Like, I still don't think he gets enough crap for that. Like the way he treats the media is just, like, you can't ask him a question. Like, is that where it's at with Westbrook? Like, you can't ask him good questions that, like, you see these press conferences and they're not asking absurd questions. Like, when Greg Popovich does that thing with the media, like, he turns down, like, talk about this, talk about that. Like, he turns down questions that are very much stupid, that aren't questions, right? And he makes fun of those.
And to be fair, Popovich was a bit particularly mean recently, but I think we got to give him a pass on that.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's gone through a lot. But... it's different with Westbrook. Like, he's just mean for no reason. And I don't understand. These guys are just trying to do their jobs. Like, they're in the locker room and they're trying to write their post game pieces. They have a deadline. They don't want to wait 45 minutes for you to take a shower and answer their questions. Like, they don't want to be there as much as you don't. Like, it's just a thing we do now. And, like, I don't know. Like, I don't understand why, like, that disrespect has to be there.
It's the whole team, man. Like, there's plenty of reports have been written about the Thunder team and how they deal with the media. Like, you do not want to be a media member and dealing with the Thunder because they basically treat you as persona non grata, and they make you out to be the enemy to the players. There's a reason that KD's like this also. He's very similar now. He deals with the media. He's always like, he always feels persecuted and irritated by them. The other Warriors don't care. They'll just talk to you.
He was groomed to that environment, right?
Yeah, they're groomed this stupid Oklahoma City environment. And thank God that James Harden got out of there. Like, he's clearly different from those other two. Like, James Harden talks to the media, and he just talks to them like a normal person. Like, Russ and KD are always being all weird about it. So I do think that's a lot of why people are kind of wishing ill for Russell Westbrook, is that they don't like the way he is obnoxious constantly. I don't really have much of a problem with Westbrook. I think he's irritating with the media stuff, but there's plenty of guys who are like that. I just don't like the Thunder organization. I don't like that team. I don't like the way they do things. I don't like their ownership. I don't like how they started existing. So I don't like the fraught history that Houston has with the Thunder over the years. So I don't wish Russ any ill, but it would not make me sad to see a Thunder lose in the first round.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, there are a bunch of reasons why Russ is so polarizing, right? And you stated a couple good ones there. I mean, also, like, there are, like, you know, flaws in his game. Like just the inefficiency in his shooting and the fact that he takes so many three-pointers they shouldn't be taking.
Yeah, he keeps taking them. Yeah. He's bad at him. He keeps taking them.
Yeah, the turnovers get a little ridiculous. And I understand he has a high usage rate and he dribbles the ball a lot. But, like, he has some of the worst turnovers in the game. And, like, it's not just a turnover. Like, when you turn it over, like, in a key possession. It's like, I feel like you should get an extra turnover if you turn over, like, in the last 5 minutes, like, of a basketball game. Because like,
in a clutch situation, live ball turnover.
Yeah, because it hurts you that much more, right? And, like, it's a lot of things, and it's the way he plays, the way he goes about it. It's what you said with Ricky Rubio. Like, why the hell is he trying to shut down Ricky Rubio? Like, the Jazz want that, man. Like, the Russ severely harmed the Thunder's defense by doing that. He got four fouls out of the game, and Rubio was baiting. Like, he was legitimately baiting Russ. Like, he knew that Russ was going to go at him hard. After the beginning tip, it seemed pretty obvious. Like, he was going to do everything he can to make sure. Like, and, like, the Jazz, like, were benefiting, like, so, like crazy. Like, Russ wouldn't sag off on Rubio on the three-point line for help defense. Like, why wouldn't you let Rubio shoot? Like, just for some personal vendetta? Like, that's dumb. To play help defense, you should sag off of Ricky Rubio. That's something, like, that benefited the Jazz. Like, and it's, like, I saw someone on Twitter. I can't remember the name, so I'm sorry. I saw someone tweet that, like, that's Russell Westbrook somehow found a way to make defense selfish. Like, that was, like, that's the perfect summation of what he did, like, in that game. And it's just, there are a bunch of things about his game that drive me crazy. And, like, he reminded me so much of players that drove me crazy in the past, like Iverson and Kobe. And, like, we just weren't allowed to talk about their flaws. Like these type of players, like, are so polarizing. And it's like that the other way, too. They have a lot of fans. They have a lot of fans. Players like Iverson, Kobe, Westbrook, like, they have huge internet fandoms, like, all over the internet. And people that are lining up to defend him every time you criticize even one mistake. And that partly drives what drives people crazy about it. Like, it's like you can't have an honest conversation about him.
Yeah, it is obnoxious how, you know, two-sided it is. You have to be either pro-Russ or anti-Russ. You can't just have the real take, which is that he's an amazingly talented player who can do nearly anything, but the way he chooses to play oftentimes limits his team. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we fleshed this out as much as we possibly could. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at RedNichNoobs and at DoNots on Twitter. Give us a good review on iTunes if you have the show. Give us 5 stars. Helps people find the show. Helps us. Support the show if you can. And yeah, guys, good night.